It is Tuesday, September 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump calls for world action against North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela.
No one has shown more contempt for other nations and for the well-being of their own people than the depraved regime in North Korea.
Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi defends her country's handling of the crisis in Rakhine State, and singer Selena Gomez overcomes health struggles to release a new single. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump called Tuesday for a great reawakening of independent sovereign nations, but told world leaders at the United Nations they must collectively confront the rogue leaders of North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela. He told the opening session of the UN General Assembly that the U.S. will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea if it is forced to defend itself and American allies from a Pyongyang nuclear or ballistic missile attack.
Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict.
Trump used his harshest rhetoric against North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about.
Trump also derided Iran.
The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy. It has turned a wealthy country with a rich history and culture into an economically depleted rogue state whose chief exports are violence, bloodshed, and chaos.
I spoke with White House correspondent Peter Heinlein, who's at the United Nations, and I talked to him about President Trump's decision to single out North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela for condemnation.
Yes, I would say those three countries are the three bad guys, as he would say. The countries that are in his sights and those that he asked the international community to join him in condemning. It was quite an event. The hall, the General Assembly Hall, was jam-packed today. People standing in the aisles. Quite unusual, even for an American president. And I think he was an object of curiosity as much as anything. He really elicited gasps from the crowd when he described Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, as Rocket Man, and called him saying he was on a suicide mission for himself and his regime. It really The highlight of that, however, was when he said the United States has great strength and patience, but if forced to defend itself, it will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. The reaction in the hall was a noticeable murmur, a buzz, some would say a gasp at this kind of talk that's not normally heard at the General Assembly debate.
Yeah, and we should note that a representative of North Korea was there in the assembly hall.
Well, the North Korean representative walked out of the hall as Trump, or before Trump entered, and the North Korean seat was vacant during his speech. So although the North Korean position, sort of as a result of a lottery where countries choose, was right in the front row, but that seat was noticeably empty.
Now, Mr. Trump also singled out Iran for criticism and was very critical as well of the U.S.-Iranian deal, which was finalized under his predecessor, Barack Obama.
Yes, he really ripped into the regime in Tehran, calling it a murderous regime and saying they shouldn't be allowed to continue what he called destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles. Of course, he has made no secret of his concern about Tehran. There was certainly no surprise. The only surprise is that his speech, the rhetoric he used in this speech, was much the same as the very strong rhetoric he uses at home. And there had been many observers who thought he would tone down that rhetoric in speaking to the assembled world leaders, but he didn't pull any punches.
And finally, he also was very critical of Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro.
Yes, he got a few chuckles when he said that the problem is in the problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented. He criticized Maduro, saying he's inflicted terrible pain and suffering on the good people of his country. So those three countries, Venezuela, North Korea, and Iran, took up a large part of President Trump's speech, which ran more than 40 minutes, and I must say was received with rapt attention, if not approval.
That's White House correspondent Peter Heinlein, who's reporting from the United Nations. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, I can imagine on social media the reaction to President Trump's speech must be quite interesting, shall we say.
Yes, and UNGA, as we talked about yesterday, has been trending for the past few days as everyone has gathered in New York. And we saw President Trump this morning doing a bit of pre-buttal to the speech, saying, "Big day at the United Nations, many good things and some tricky ones happening. We have a great team, big speech at 10 a.m. And it was indeed a big speech, as we heard from Pete Heinlein there. One of the phrases that has been trending after that speech, hashtag Rocket Man. Of course, that line, Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime, referring to Kim Jong-un. Trump previously used this phrase, Rocket Man, to describe Kim Jong-un in a tweet on Sunday. Some question as to why he's using this term, if he's not trying to reference his name or trying to get more attention on the issue of North Korea by using this phrase. Many people pointing out that The Economist magazine depicted Kim Jong-il, who's Kim Jong-un's father, as a rocket on their cover back in 2006, calling him Rocket Man. So maybe Trump noticed that or found that. But in addition to that, we're seeing other stories trending, of course, Iran and Venezuela. But a lot of people talking about Russia and criticism for Trump not speaking out more against Russia in the midst of the investigation into their meddling in the U.S. election. Some people saying that the speech was very rambling. It was too focused on America. It wasn't the right speech for the right audience. But that's precisely one of the reasons why the speech is being praised by some in Trump's base. They said they loved it because it was very America-focused. It put the UN on notice, saying America is not going to give without getting anything in return. And I've seen more than one social media post calling this Reagan-esque, saying it was very much like Ronald Reagan saying America is going to be the greatest in the world and everybody better get in line during his speeches and presidency during the Cold War. So that continues unabated on social media, the debate about the speech, and I think we're going to continue to see people coming out for and against it over the next few hours and even days.
Yeah, and I'm sure. And another thing, Mr. Trump talked about the fact that the U.S. is the largest donor to the United Nations
yes,
as well.
That's a campaign theme. He said, we put in this much money, we should get something back.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Hurricane Maria takes a direct hit on the island of Dominica. Disagreements and logistics throw a new Kenyan poll date into doubt. Israel shoots down a Hezbollah drone. And former President Trump's campaign chief, Paul Manafort, was subject to a secret wiretap. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. Scientists say for the first half of Earth's history, there was no free or breathable oxygen in the atmosphere. While some oxygen was being produced by early organisms through photosynthesis, most of it was being absorbed by minerals such as olivine. Then about 2.3 billion years ago, Earth's atmosphere began its first substantial and permanent inflow of breathable oxygen with the so-called Great Oxidation Event. According to a new study, this event took place around the same time as changes were being made in the Earth's crust. Study suggests as the crust evolved, the olivine nearly disappeared. Without that mineral absorbing so much free oxygen, the gas was able to accumulate in our atmosphere, providing the kind of air we know and need today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, pop singer Selena Gomez has a new single, Fetish. Myanmar State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi, under international criticism over her government's silence about the security crackdown in western Rakhine State, told the people of Myanmar, also known as Burma, that she does not fear global scrutiny and is committed to a sustainable solution to the conflict.
It is not the intention of the Myanmar government to apportion blame or to abnegate responsibility. We condemn all human rights violations and unlawful violence. We are committed to the restoration of peace, stability, and rule of law throughout the state. Human rights violations and all other acts that impair stability and harmony and undermine the rule of law will be addressed in accordance with strict norms of justice. We feel deeply for the suffering of all the people who have been caught up in the conflict. Those who have had to flee their homes are many, not just Muslims and Rakhines, but also small minority groups such as the Dine, Maro, Tep, Maramaji, and Hindus, of whose presence most of the world is totally unaware.
In a televised address Tuesday, the Nobel laureate, whose National League for Democracy has been in government for 18 months, defended the country's rights record and said resolving the sectarian dispute, decades in the making, will take time. She expressed concern over the exodus of hundreds of thousands of Muslims to Bangladesh following insurgent attacks August 25th against security forces that prompted a crackdown that has allegedly burned villages and left hundreds dead. She said her government is offering safety and aid and hopes they will return and take part in a verification process leading to citizenship. In Myanmar's largest city, Yangon, independent analyst Richard Horsey told VOA's Victor Beatty that Aung San Suu Kyi had to balance international concerns about the plight of the Rohingya with nationalist sentiments among the country's majority Buddhists.
Well, I think the content of the speech demonstrated very clearly how fine a line she feels she has to tread between what really are diametrically opposed views between the majority of people in Myanmar and much of the international community.
The UN has called what amounts to ethnic cleansing as far as the crackdown that has forced hundreds of thousands of Muslim Rohingya to flee to Bangladesh.
That was not covered in detail in Aung San Suu Kyi's speech. She stated that the facts had to be determined, that there were allegations and counter-allegations. So she has not stated clearly her view or the government's view on who is responsible for the exodus of refugees to Bangladesh.
Did you get the sense that perhaps the refugees can return, perhaps they'll deal with the issue of citizenship down the road?
Well, I think the most specific commitment in the speech was that the government was prepared at any time for a repatriation of refugees from Bangladesh under the terms of an April 1992 agreement between the two countries. That was following a previous exodus of a quarter of a million people in 1991-92. It was a very specific commitment. But, of course, the time for repatriation is some way down the track. We're currently still in the midst of the crisis, and large numbers of people continue to flee to Bangladesh. It'll only be after the conditions are created in Rakhine State for an orderly, safe, dignified return, and people were voluntarily willing to come back, that the provisions of that agreement could be put in place.
Richard, as you know, of course, there are strong feelings, nationalist feelings, sectarian feelings among majority Buddhists about the presence of the Rohingya Muslims. Is reconciliation possible?
I think it's incredibly difficult, and clearly the attacks of the 25th of August have made it many times more difficult to envision a future where the communities are living integrated again, peacefully side by side. That is many years down the road, and it will take an awful lot of work by the government and across society to achieve that. The space for reconciliation, the space for steps that would allow this population to live with rights, recognition, freedoms, dignity are far away at the moment.
Richard Horsey said whether the more than 400,000 Rohingya return to Myanmar depends on the arrangements agreed to between Myanmar and Bangladesh, involvement of the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, and conditions on the ground in Rakhine State. He said while the Rohingya problem was decades in the making, Aung San Suu Kyi's government has little time to resolve the issue given the impatience of the international community to see the crisis end. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. A popular young singer has struggled with health problems in recent years. I'm joined by VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London, who has details.
Selena Gomez, who has a new song, which she just released, and we'll check it out in a minute, called Fetish. But first, what's made news is the fact that Selena, who was diagnosed with lupus several years ago, recently underwent a kidney transplant operation. She kept it very quiet. It happened at the beginning of the summer. A lot of fans were asking, why aren't you out promoting your upcoming new album and your new music? And they kind of thought she was slacking. But she finally revealed to her 120-plus million Instagram followers that the real reason was she had a kidney transplant. The kidney was donated to her by one of her best friends, who's an actor, Francia Raisa. And so they love each other. She referred to her as sisters. Obviously, it takes a big step to give somebody your kidney, one of your organs. But apparently the kidney is resistant to lupus. It's functioning very well, and Selena's doing very well, which is great because she, a year ago, checked herself into rehab over anxiety and depression, which she said is a part of having lupus. So she's bounced back, and now today we're going to check out a new song called Fetish.
I'm not surprised, I sympathize. I can't deny your appetite.
Is she going to be able to tour? Is her health improving?
Well, her health is improving. That's the big question right now, is how's she doing? She's been spotted recently in New York City where she's filming a movie. She's appearing in the next Woody Allen film. So she's been filming there on set and has a house in New York. And apparently her boyfriend, The Weeknd, has moved in with her. So they're sharing the house in New York. And she's slowly but surely releasing music. The new song we just heard is called Fetish, and that follows several other singles that she's put out, Good For You, It Ain't Me, Bad Liar. These are songs she's slowly been releasing this year. She has been telling her fans she has a new album coming out. We don't know what it's called or when it will be out, and I'm sure there will be a tour to follow the new album, which is kind of standard procedure in the business. When you release an album, you tour to support it. But she recently celebrated her 15th anniversary of her debut on Barney and Friends. She was a little girl on a little kid's TV show when she was hired for her first acting job. And so that was 15 years ago. And then last week, she celebrated the 10th anniversary of her days on a Disney TV show called Wizards of Waverly Place. She was 15. She's now 25. She said that she recalls when she was 15 being on the beaches after just premiering on Wizards of Waverly Place, where men, grown men photographers and the paparazzi were taking her photos wearing a bikini. And she thought that was invasive. She said, I'm 15. What do you want with me? She didn't realize the price that comes with fame,
yes,
which she's been paying ever since. Of course, from her much publicized relationship with Justin Bieber and all the other things been going on in her life. So Selena Gomez is in the spotlight for today on the International Edition segment. And the new song is called Fetish.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. You got a fetish for my love. And that is the music of singer Selena Gomez. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. There's also a lot on there about the United Nations General Assembly. So please follow our website for more details. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Recently, the UN Security Council unanimously adopted Resolution 2373, which extends the mandate of the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL, for another year. UNIFIL has been in Lebanon for nearly four decades. However, after the Hezbollah-Israeli conflict in 2006, it was charged with monitoring the cessation of hostilities and accompanying and supporting the Lebanese armed forces as they deployed in southern Lebanon. UNIFIL was also mandated to assist the Lebanese armed forces to establish southern Lebanon as an area free of any armed personnel, assets, and weapons, other than those of the Lebanese government, or UNIFIL. The newly adopted resolution strengthens this mandate and comes at a time when the United States and others have pointed out that Hezbollah, responsible for initiating the 2006 conflict, has not only rebuilt but increased its arsenal in Lebanon over the past decade. U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley welcomed the renewal of UNIFIL's mandate. This resolution gives UNIFIL robust authority to help Lebanon keep the South safe. What we sought in this renewal is to make sure UNIFIL is doing its job to the fullest extent possible. Ambassador Haley called current conditions in southern Lebanon very dangerous. At the direction of its patron Iran, the terrorist organization Hezbollah has thousands of missiles and thousands of trained fighters, all beyond the control of the Lebanese government. The renewal of UNIFIL's mandate by the Security Council, among other measures, calls for UNIFIL to step up its patrols and inspections, thereby helping to disrupt Hezbollah's illegal activity. More importantly, Ambassador Haley noted, the renewed mandate requires UNIFIL to report when it is prevented from seeing something it wants to inspect. From now on, when the peacekeepers encounter a Hezbollah roadblock, she said, they have to tell us the details of where, when, and why they got stopped. This transparency will put an end to the ignorance about what's really going on in southern Lebanon. For the United States, this is a time for strength, resolve, and accountability at the United Nations, Ambassador Haley declared. The renewal of the UNIFIL mandate, she emphasized, is an important step, but there is much more to do. Just as Hezbollah is stepping up its efforts, the United States and now the United Nations are stepping up our efforts against them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.